Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Do you want to meet myself and Ollie Davis of Wrestle Ramble fame? Well, you can do just that by joining us at Wrestling Media Con on September 8th and 9th from the Bowlers Exhibition Centre in Manchester, England. Ollie and I will be doing a live episode of Wrestle Ramble as well as signings and photos, but that's not all. Wrestling Media Con will have shows from Cultaholic, Inside the Ropes, Wrestling with Regret, Don Callis, Botchamania, Art of Wrestling, Sean Waltman, and more. There will also be the first ever Wrestling Media Hall of Fame and wrestling shows from Impact Wrestling, where they will be taking on the best the UK has to offer, and Revolution Pro Wrestling featuring the legendary Jushin Thunder Liger defending his British J Cup crown. Tickets are on sale now, so head over to WrestlingMediaCon.com. That's WrestlingMediaCon.com.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
And you are Laurie Blake, and this is the first time we're doing a Wrestle Ramble where you're not trying to impersonate or steal someone's identity.
I know,
nice,
we've
man.
Moved on to bigger and better things.
Yeah, it's nice, man. Ollie Davis, unfortunately, is not with us today. He is, I mean, he's on the other side of the glass now waving at us. He's very busy doing business things. So Laurie and I are going to take over the reins to review Impact Wrestling's Slammiversary 16, which is really weird to say because I remember watching the very first Slammiversary way back when.
When it wasn't actually an anniversary of anything, it was just slammy, really.
When it was just like, hey, it's our birthday, so we're going to do a big show, and it was before they Bound for Glory became their big show, so Slammiversary felt like their big show. So it's kind of weird here to be, you know, 16 years later watching Slammiversary, although that was like 2 years into their run. But either way,
fairly redemptive at this point.
Exactly. Yeah. So Impact is a company that had a rocky couple of years with lots of it's been changing hands between people. No one's really known where the company is. A lot of people have stopped watching the show. But as of late, in the last couple of years in particular, it has been very, very good. And the Redemption pay-per-view they put on earlier this year was very good. And this was an excellent show.
It was pretty much like wall-to-wall bangers, wasn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
It was like almost, there was no dull one. And even matches he sort of didn't think would work. I guess like Matt Sydal versus Brian Cage. Are you looking at that and you're thinking, well, Brian Cage had a kind of unstoppable run. That might just be a squash match, which seems legit. And they managed to make that even that like work in a really kind of, you felt that he might not win it, and then when he did, you're like, okay, well, that's all justified. It all felt very like well thought out. All the build was good as well. That was actually everything had stakes.
Yeah,
it felt like there was a point to it.
That is really a good key to this. Like when we're watching the sort of the promo packages before each of the matches, you're like, they really are making this feel like it's a huge deal. And a lot of the times, it really is a huge deal.
Yeah.
And I remember in the build-up to this pay-per-view as well, the four-way match between Taiji Ishimori, Phoenix, and Johnny Impact, and what was supposed to be Rich Swann. Everyone was like, that's far and away going to steal the show.
Yeah, and then it was Barnstormer.
Yeah, everyone was like, this is like, it's going to be match of the night. Hands down, it's going to be match of the night. Unfortunately, Rich Swann suffered a concussion in the week on Thursday, so he wasn't able to do the show. So PT Williams, Canada's own PT Williams, stepped in, an excellent replacement. And in the end, although it was an excellent match, it was by no means stealing the show.
No,
there was so much great stuff to come.
Yeah,
right. But this match, this four-way, was still really good.
If this was a WWE match, that would have been the match of the night.
Yes.
On a your bog standard WWE pay-per-view, that would have been match of the night if that match was just inserted here. But here it's somehow got lost in the shuffle almost. Like, it's like, okay, well, everything else was really, really good.
And it's funny as well. So Impact Wrestling put up a tweet like on the day of the show trying to encourage people to buy it, saying like, have you been let down by recent wrestling pay-per-view events? Well, check out this cut. And I was like, oh, you throwing a bit of shade there, yeah. Impact Wrestling. No.
Well, the rule's not extreme enough for you. Because we've got some matches on tonight's card. Little... knock your socks off.
Yeah, given that.
And then nail your socks to the ring and then stamp on them and then hit you with a baseball bat for a bit.
Yeah, so this was this was more Extreme Rules than Extreme Rules actually was, because you had a number of matches on this show. Three in particular. You had Tommy Dreamer versus Eddie Edwards, and they had a very ECW brawling match. There was a match that was really good, but the crowd were more into the hardcore spots than the actual story they were telling. But this was a hot crowd all night long. Really, really great. And I love the presentation they had for this as well. So you had that match. Then you had the LAX versus OGs in a 51-50 street fight for the tag team titles.
Should have been LAX and LA Extra.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Very
like
nice.
Like when you get the extra factor.
Yes. Or Wrestle Ramble Extra. Yeah. And you had that. And then you had Sami Callihan versus Pentagon Jr. in a mask versus hair match that was... frankly disgusting at times.
Yeah, it was grim.
Grim is such a good word to describe it.
I'd be like, if I was Sami Callihan, at one point I would have just said, do you know what, you can have me here.
Yeah.
Just leave the skin on my head. Just leave me the skin on my brain.
Pretty much, because it was trying to take it off with those spikes. But we'll go through the show. You've got some more detailed notes than I have on some of the early matches. So I just watched the show rather than taking notes.
First match, let's talk about that. Let's start with the opener, which was Petey Williams, Phoenix, Taji and Ishimori as Bone Soldier, and Johnny Impact returning to the company. So this was a return both for Ishimori and for Johnny Impact, who's been out for a while. Both got really big old pops as they came out, and it just went off from the start. They just went okay, match begins. Wah! And then it just went on like that for 10, I think it was about 10 minutes long.
What this felt like was a TNA match of old. Like TNA back in the day when they used to have these pay-per-views, and they would open with an X Division match, or they would have an X Division match on the card that wasn't like for the belt, it wasn't for a number one contender's run, it was just here are four lads and they're going to go out and they're going to do loads of high spots.
Yeah.
Don't give a toss about in-ring psychology. Never mind that, mate. Just go out there and do loads of impressive flips and that. And that was this match to a T, and it was lovely.
Yeah, a lot of my notes just say, that guy's nuts. This guy's nuts. So there's a lot of... yeah. There's a lot of...
just effing nutso.
Yeah. Phoenix is ridiculous, just as a rolling cutter through the... But, I mean, I think, like, coming out of it, Phoenix looked the strongest in this. I think the stuff that man can do is insane.
Well, yeah.
There was a whole bit where they were doing... him and Johnny Impact were doing... I find it very difficult to keep up with Johnny's changing names. Johnny Impact were doing, like, sort of the test of strength handhold. But he managed to jump up onto the top rope from basically standing, leapt up on the top rope, bounced around on the various ropes, dropped down to the second rope, bounced up to the top one, then managed to somehow... Johnny jumped up as well, and they were holding hands across the ropes. And then it's just a hurricanrana, but that just was like... You're like, how does anyone...
It's lovely, lovely
lucha
stuff.
How are they doing that? You know those mountain goats that you get that just like hop up and you're how are you standing on that ledge like that? That's these guys.
Yeah.
But with flips also.
Phoenix is very much a guy that impacted quite panic. You know, really behind at the moment. He came out later in the night during the Pentagon Jr. match as well. And I think they're sort of really working to them together as almost a team. I'd imagine to be able to take on OVE and Sami Callihan. They had a fantastic six-man tag on Impact Wrestling in the lead-up to this pay-per-view. So I think that there's a guy they're very much behind at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Johnny picks up the win in the kind of fallout of this. But I think everyone looked great in this match. Petey Williams continually teasing the Canadian Destroyer in front of a Canadian crowd is brilliant. And then when he finally hits it, everyone goes nuts. But then he eats the feet of Phoenix with that. He does a top rope spot and he jumps off and double foots him in the face.
Oh,
brutal.
Brutal. You got to wonder as well that if Rich Swann wasn't injured, or you know, if he didn't have that concussion, how he would have played into this match. Because they were another guy they seemed to be very much behind. He had that great match with Phoenix and the six-man tag we mentioned earlier. Whether they were going to be pushing him as kind of like a bit of a face of the X Division, like maybe as a next contender for Brian Cage, who won the title later in the night.
So it'll be interesting to see, and it's going to be now interesting to see where Johnny Storm, I need to call him for a second. I'm going really old school British FWA.
Let's call him John Morrison. Let's just go with Morrison. Morrison.
Yeah, not the FWA wrestler. This is Johnny Nitro, a.k.a. John Morrison, a.k.a. Johnny Impact.
A.k.a. Johnny Mundo.
Yeah, yes.
Ah, Johnny!
Yes, Johnny 1. So where Johnny's going to go from here?
Yeah,
Johnny 5.
It's interesting. Rich Swann, I think, would be a weird... Like, actually, I think... Because everyone was fairly serious in this match, and it was obviously just a spot fest. Rich Swann's tendency to break out into dance and do a bit more of that stuff might have actually jarred in this a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, because they did some nice work with having these sort of dream face-offs. Like when they had quite early in the match, they got everyone out of the ring, and then Johnny Nitro Mundo comes in, as does Ishimori, and everyone's going, welcome back, welcome them both back. But also, it's a kind of dream face-off to see them two in the ring together.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think with Mundo, I'm just going to call him Johnny Mundo. Johnny Mundo being put into the match as well, it kind of like it removes it from being an X Division four-way into, because he's a world title guy,
yes,
unless, of course, you're moving... Nitro, unless you're moving Johnny into...
We need to come up with some sort of portmanteau of the entire thing, like Morrison, Mundo, Nitro Impact.
Let us know in the comments what we should be calling him.
If you work out what it is.
Whether they're going to be moving him into the X Division, or whether it was like putting a heavyweight in there, a heavyweight, so to speak, into this match. But I thought it was really, really fun. Really fun opening four-way. We then got Tessa Blanchard versus Ali. So this is kind of a bit of a showcase match for Tessa Blanchard, really. Their latest signee. They've got a lot of high hopes for Tessa. You know, because she is someone, I suppose, in the eye of Impact fans as well. She is someone who has chosen Impact over NXT, because she did do a couple of like one-shot deals with NXT, but she has chosen to work with Impact Wrestling rather than, you know, pursue further deals with them. She signed with them for, you know, I think it's an extended contract. I think it's like a year, maybe 2 years or so. So she's going to be there for the long haul.
Mm.
So maybe she could be the next contender for Sue Young. But this was, it was a match, but it was lower down the card. Good stuff, though.
Yeah, but definitely there to put Tessa over.
Yes.
And also potentially... move Ali on, I don't know.
Well, that's it, because there's been lots of rumours that Ali is not sticking around. So she asked for her release while she was still Knockouts champion. And I think it was really awkward, actually, because she won the belt and then asked for a release. And they were like, oh, we've just given you the belt.
Yeah. Do you not want to stay then?
Yeah. Sure. So I don't know.
It's basically a promotion.
I don't know where Ali sits at the moment. If she's going to go across to WWE. She wasn't part of the tryouts or anything like that, but whether she's sticking around with Impact, who knows. But this very much was like using an established name in the women's division like Ali to put over Tessa. You know, smart move. Then we got the ECW kendo stick, you know. Remember an ECW match? We had one of those here in 2018, because that's what...
Still exists.
I'm not trying to sound down on this either. This is why you hire Tommy Dreamer. This is why you bring in Tommy Dreamer for your shows. You're like, well, we really want an ECW match on this show. Who could we call? Tommy Dreamer.
Who's good at chucking bins around?
Yeah.
Tommy Dreamer. Who's good with a kendo stick? It's Tommy Dreamer.
Yeah, let's just get... He's the one who's in the best shape out of that lot still.
Sort of. One of my notes is he looks like crap.
Yes. Yeah, he's been having more donuts than wrestling matches.
Yeah.
But
he's been scooping up with a kendo stick. That's what it's for, the little hole.
It's like a Homer Simpson with the donut machine, just throwing them in, tipping the kendo stick up so they all fall down. But this was very much an ECW match, including ECW chants in the match as well.
Very fervent ECW, absolute zealotry for ECW in the crowd that night. ECW!
Well, there was a lot
of camera shots of just people going,
there's a guy in the front row, or he might have been like two rows back, who was holding up an ECW championship belt, like a replica ECW championship. And I'm like, well... I wonder what
he knew what match he came for, didn't he? He knew what he was going for.
But that's it, you know, and it works. That's why you put a guy like Tommy Dreamer on the card. But it was good though. You know, it was a typical Tommy Dreamer ECW match. But they were trying to tell this story with Eddie Edwards, because there's been this, you know, he was working with Eddie, but then like they've been, you know, against each other after the last show. I think was Redemption. They did this incredible angle with him and Sami Callihan. And Sami Callihan has really been this sort of destructive force through Impact, where not only is he going after Pentagon later in the match, he's got this cross-through storyline with Eddie and Tommy, and that's kind of what I really like about Impact at the moment. They've got all these sort of crossing over storylines. So that was good stuff. Then we got Matt Sydal versus Brian Cage for the X Division Championship. Brian Cage is a big, big lad.
He's gigantic. They were saying, oh, that, and obviously it's just commentary, but they're saying like he's put on like an extra £20 for this match. It's like, why? He's already the biggest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Except The Rock, maybe.
I was going to say, yeah.
And that's The Rock post-wrestling. He's the biggest wrestler I've ever seen, I'm sure. Like, just in terms of
just wide,
sheer wideness.
Other wrestlers just orbit him.
Yeah, like, that's actually what...
They essentially just, they collapse around him, like stars, but more or less they just orbit around
him. If he moves to the wrong side of the ring, it actually just gets torn up in his...
Tidal waves happen on the other side of the world.
I thought this was a really good... I enjoy Matt Sydal's whole gimmick and, you know, there's a sort of new agey third eye stuff, and he's saying in this, he's like, you know, everyone's saying that Brian Cage is going to win this because he looks like Brian Cage. He's like, but I've got my third eye open and I can see this way to victory. Yeah. Well, it didn't work, mate. But, you know, like...
Your third eye sucks,
lad. Your third eye absolutely sucks. You need to... should have gone to Specsavers. You should have got... What he should get is the Velveteen Dreams glasses, because they've got a third eye.
Exactly, yeah. That's not really worked out for him either.
No.
Because he keeps losing as well.
He is on a massive losing streak.
Bless his heart.
It's just... I can't believe that they managed to make this match work, really. Like, they did so many clever bits of... You know, like, Brian Cage still managed to come out looking dominant and strong, but Sydal managed to look like he was wily and clever, and there were all these, like, smart little bits. There were amazing reversals from both of them of each other's sort of signature moves.
Yeah.
It was really cool. One of my favourite bits was there's a bit where Sydal jumps off the top rope. I don't know what move you're going for if you're doing that straight into what is this. He gets caught in a suplex, and it looks like Cage is going to go for the drill claw at that point. But it's... Oh, like, to be able to just go, oh, I've just got that man now.
Just caught you, mate.
Imagine being able to just do that. Like, I'm just holding a whole man. I've just caught him out of the air.
So this was really interesting. And as you say, like, they were doing this strength versus speed thing. And perhaps that might be my only complaint I have about this show, is that when you had the 51-50 street fight, and then you follow that up again with, like, the gruesome hair versus mask match, when early in the night... Excuse me, you also had the ECW match there. It's almost a bit of, like, similarities with those. And then this match was kind of structured the same way as the Aries Moose match was, which is the speed versus strength.
Well, and a little bit like the... And also a little bit like LAX versus the OGs, because LAX are the nimbler and the OG guys are much bigger. So, there was also... Watching it, there did feel like a lot of the same beats being hit. And the commentary struggled to say something new, and I think they ended up saying a lot of the same sort of thing. Like, I'm pretty sure they said the same thing about Moose and Aries,
but they
saying,
didn't.
Like, he's put on 20 more pounds and he's trimmed down for this match. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
Sure he has.
Yeah. But as a credit to Impact Wrestling, not every match was the same, which is, you know, our most common complaint with WWE pay-per-views. Like, Extreme Rules, regardless of the stipulation they had around it, most matches were structured exactly the same. You tune into Raw and SmackDown, all the matches are structured exactly the same. Although
the problem
there
is
were...
they are the same matches. Well, WWE is
although
like...
there was
a... again.
Although there were similarities in here, the 51-50 street fight was completely different to the main event. The mask versus hair match was different to the main event.
Well,
was like, and, you know, even the Sue Young and Madison Rayne match didn't feel like the Tessa Blanchard Ali match. There was a lot of variety. Well, there wasn't a lot of variety, but there was at least some variety.
Well, you would imagine, like, in a scenario where you're going, well, these matches are all going to be fairly extreme. You know, people would end up doing similar spots of, like, we're using some chairs, we're using this thing, we're using that thing. Everyone sort of picked their own weapon.
Yes.
And it was like, we're just working with these few things.
Yeah.
You guys work with that. You guys, you know, there wasn't tables and everything. It wasn't all ladders. It wasn't all tables. It wasn't all chairs. It was actually being quite inventive and bringing in new different bits and bobs.
That's very true, yeah, because the 51-50 street fight was really built around ladders and tables.
Yeah.
Whereas the hair versus mask match was built around chairs and spikes. Pierce me for on a spike.
The worst thing of all time.
We'll come on to that. Sue Young retained her Knockouts Championship against Madison Rayne using the Mandible Claw. I liked Sue Young's gimmick.
The gross choke, as it should be called. gross choke.
And then she, like, buried her. Well, not buried her, but they put her in a coffin, and then she sort of stood up on top of it. I like the undead bridesmaids around her. Yeah. I think that's quite a cool visual.
I don't know why they put her in a coffin at the end, because that's the coffin she came out in. So how's she getting home?
How's she getting back to the graveyard? Very true. But yeah, it was you know, some good stuff in there. And then we got the tag team title match. This was the match, I'll be honest, I was most looking forward to on this card, because I'm an old school TNA fan. And my favourite thing, or one of my favourite things about old school TNA, was LAX. Loved Homicide and Hernandez. I was such a mark for them. And when I've had a bit of a break from watching Impact Wrestling, and when I got back into it, one of the first things I saw was that Conan had brought in this new version of LAX with Santana and Ortiz. Mm-hmm. My instant reaction was like, it's not Homicide and Hernandez, though, is it?
I dislike this immediately.
No, I dislike it. It's different, isn't it? You make changes.
I don't like change. I do not like change.
But these two are very, very good. They and I was good. Very quickly turned around onto this and be like, oh no, they're excellent. Like, yeah, they are really, really good.
Well, it's almost as if the choice was very smart to bring in people who are good to do to bring back an old gimmick. It's something, again, is another market difference from WWE, where you'd be like, oh, you've just given them a t-shirt and said, yep, they're them now.
This is you guys now.
Yeah. Rather than actually going, oh, well, these guys will actually win over the crowd by being good at what they do.
And on that topic of like different presentation as well, this opening video package that like hyped up this match, not only did it not feel like, you know, every other WWE video package you've ever seen, it didn't feel like the same video pack or, you know, a similar video package on this show.
No,
like,
they went for different aesthetics.
It had its own taste, its own flavor. And I loved it. I loved it so much because it's all about like Conan talking about mi familia and, you know, these guys stabbed me in the back. You put a hit out on me, you know, putting them up to the baby faces. And here come the original LAX, the OGs. And they're coming in and be like, no, mate, we're going to take over. We're taking back LAX, live and die in LAX. And it's like, it's them walking down these streets and like their homes areas, and it was just really cool. The music was excellent. I mean, my first note I've got here, and the three of us talked about this when we were watching the show earlier, is that this is the most personal tag team match. But like, okay, WWE haven't had a tag team feud that's felt this important in quite some time. And I was trying to think back when a tag team feud has felt really, like, to the point where it's so important, it's third from the top of the card.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like, I feel like the New Day's Usos had that towards the end, but it didn't start with that.
No.
And it built that through the matches that they were having.
It almost happened by accident.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. I think the actual gravitas of that story was accidental based on the fact that WWE missold it and put it on the pre-show a couple of times, and everyone was like, that was the best match of the night, you idiots. And they were like, so actually, really, the feud was those two tag teams versus WWE, not against each other. But yeah, that's the closest I would feel like, where you felt like, oh, it matters who wins this now. Anything that's happened, like, I mean, Raw's tag team division is a shock horror fest of just,
it's a shambles.
What's even going on? Like, why are the Revival not at the top?
Question number one.
Where is AOP? What are they doing?
Yeah.
Like, they're here now, eventually, but you know.
On SmackDown, and actually someone pointed this out to me recently, because they're doing this tag team title tournament to crown new... Oh, their boat is going to fall down.
Oh, Bella.
They're going to crown new number one contenders through this four-team tag team tournament. Mm. And it features the New Day, who Bludgeon Brothers have already beaten. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot. It features The Bar, who haven't been on TV for a long time. And it features The Usos, who the Bludgeon Brothers have already beat a lot. Mm. And Sanity, who haven't had the best start. So actually, I look at that and I'm like, yeah, I'm not actually that interested in anything. And that's not any of the fault of the guys. It's just that they've all been positioned as just like, these are lads on the roster.
Yeah.
And they're going to have a match against the Bludgeon Brothers.
Well, we struggle with it as well. Like, the problem with doing, you know, you feel like Sanity's probably the choice here. And I was saying this before Sanity ever came up, was they've got the same gimmick as the Bludgeon Brothers, is that they're a dominant, chaotic, do what they want kind of thing. So like them against Bludgeon Brothers is like, well, who's going to jump on who first?
It's exactly.
What will happen is nothing, because they'll all be waiting around corners for each other. No one's walking. Everyone's just hiding.
Yeah. And I think as well, the other side of that tag team tournament could work if we were invested in the Bludgeon Brothers as champions. But because since they've won the belt, they've done nothing.
No.
It's hard to get invested in another team trying to get the belts off of them. And that's what you want from a dominant force, is you want to, as a heel dominant force, you want to see the baby faces get those belts off them, get them off the big bullies.
Well, they need to be more destructive. That's the thing. It's like they were so dominant and destructive in the run to getting the titles, and then they stopped, and then it was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So now they show up at the end of people's matches and have stare downs. It's like, that doesn't feel very Bludgeon Brothery.
But let's talk about
let's go back to Impact.
Well, yeah, we kind of got sidetracked there, but that's kind of, it's how good this was, is that it makes me just like really get annoyed at the tag team scene within, you know, not just WWE, with other promotions as well. I really, really like this.
They always feel like second fiddle belts, and here it felt like this actually mattered.
So much,
the belts actually happened to be the icing rather than this wasn't the whole feud. You know, it wasn't just like, we want those. It wasn't. Then, come on, let us have a fight. It was, you know, we've got some stuff to settle, but I'll have those as well, thank you. Just to humiliate you further.
And if I think they actually said this on commentary, that for OGs, this isn't about the belts.
No.
It's just about getting back at LAX. And they kind of put over that, like, that Homicide and Hernandez felt disrespected because Conan brought back the LAX gimmick but didn't bring them, although I think Homicide was in the original lineup when he brought back LAX. He just wasn't, you know, he wasn't wrestling with them. So there you got this, and then outside it with King, who's put this hit out on Conan. And this was, holy heckins, like, this match started out, and it was just madness galore. You know, tornado rules, which works perfectly for this kind of match, and it was just absolutely chaos. You had OGs, rather, coming out, like, from the old-style 5150 entrance they used to do back in the old, the old days of TNA, and then you had LAX come out from the crowd with all these sirens blaring and stuff, and Conan walks with them. They just look like this awesome force, and then it is just chaos from the start. Like, Hernandez just tried the border toss within the first 30 seconds of the match, I felt. And then LAX just ran wild, and then, like, before you blink and you miss it, because I'm, you know, we're writing notes while watching this, before I'd even finished writing down LAX run wild, 1,000 tables had been set up around ringside under the ring. I was like, where did all these tables come from?
There was a great bit where they just leathered each other with bin lids for ages. There was a bit they brought out Drano, which I'm assuming is bleach.
Yes.
And then that was wafted around for a bit.
They teased setting him on fire.
The crowd were going, "We want fire." And it's like, what?
This match is barely two minutes old.
So this match has started because someone put a hit on somebody else, and now you're giving them the ability to put each other on fire. I feel Impact isn't very safe. I just get the feeling that...
We'll come on to that in a minute. So they did this spot where Ortiz and Homicide are in the corner, and they're kind of sort of like huddled over, and then the idea was Santana was going to climb up on top of them and then dive off onto Hernandez, who would catch them and then do a move, and he'd look, "I'm Hernandez, and I'm big and I'm impressive." But it took so long for Santana to climb up that Hernandez was just in a ring, almost like in an old school, you know, the old wrestling games where you punch someone and they're like knocked down. Just like wobbling on your feet. So that didn't quite work.
He was rolling the controller internally.
Exactly, like. Yeah. But they did a really creative ladder spot. Where they laid this ladder down. They laid Hernandez down on it, and then did lots of, like, you know, big flip dives on it, including where he did a springboard moonsault while screaming "F.U."
Yeah, I wrote that too. Really, I was like, "That's brilliant."
He just goes "F.U." Really, really made me laugh. And then, oh man,
the somersault plancher through the table.
Yes,
that was...
I was about to say it's like the suicide roll through it. Like,
it's crazy.
It looked like he teleported through the ropes. That's how like smooth it was in like the movement. Absolutely
Santana's
awesome.
Got some incredible... I keep calling it Santana, as in Carlos Santana.
He's going to play with some really nice guitar licks.
He's smooth, and he's got a really nice super kick, is what I was actually going to... Yeah. But the level of, obviously, thigh slap going on there is insane.
It's insane.
He's getting some great noise off that.
Yeah, and then we get... basically, this is where we go table of mania. As you said, we had the suicide roll through the table. Then we had a Death Valley driver through a table by Ortiz on Homicide. And then a border toss through the table as well. But then Santana hits possibly the biggest cannonball in the corner I've ever seen in my life. Like, he nearly flew over the turnbuckles.
He just
massive.
Sort of went, "Watch your face."
Boom! Conan then gets involved here. We get to the finish. What a finish this was as well. Conan gets on the ring apron and he starts like screaming at Homicide. Homicide spits in his face. But behind his back, Santana is setting up thumbtacks.
Conan's chucks in the little bag, doesn't he? As Homicide turns around, he's...
Yeah.
And he lobs him in.
Yeah, so he's like got all these thumbtacks down. But this is where I thought this was a wonderful, crazy spot. It made me feel a bit sick. Yeah. Turns around, and he just throws some of the thumbtacks at his face, which I thought was awesome. Like, that was really cool because, like, this feels like a street fight. This feels like a down and dirty, grimy, gritty street fight. And he throws them into it, hits a body splash and a big splash off the top for the win. I loved that finish. There's blood everywhere.
That's awful.
Like, there's just blood absolutely everywhere. But then we have
is tetanus central, let me tell you.
Then we've got the post-match in which the OGs beat down Conan, and they got the slapjack to the back of him up, which was Conan's favourite weapon. It was his weapon of choice. And then they defaced the belts. They did all the tag teams, and they sprayed OG on the belts.
And they left with them.
Josh Madden's going, like, "They don't belong to you. They aren't yours."
But I enjoy the idea, like, because I enjoy the idea that there's going to be follow-through on that as well. Like, you know, they might just keep them.
Yeah.
Because, again, like, not to always bring this back to WWE, but... Nikki Cross took the belt off Shayna Baszler.
She gave it back.
And she, yeah, at some point she gave it back in the week that it was unsaid. You know, like, yeah. It wasn't like she just ran off with it forever. This, I feel like they might just keep them.
I'd like to see them, like, so I feel this is going to build towards Bound for Glory, which they announced is going to be in New York this year. Great market for them, really. So I'd like to see them do a big blow-off match at Bound for Glory. Yeah, you got to wonder.
Just to win those those defaced belts back. You'd be like, you could just have them now, we'll get new ones.
But you got
to... ruin these. Yeah, you've spoilt them now.
But, man, yeah. You got to wonder, though, if they are building to another match, I mean, where'd you go from here?
Yeah.
It almost felt like the blow-off match to this feud.
Yeah, no.
Because it was carnage.
I don't know. I guess it's one of those just, hopefully there is some level of escalation here that they can work out what it will be. You know, I don't know. Like, it feels like the Gargano-Ciampa feud, if that continues. Like, where do you go? Like, this is the end. Like, and it's, you know, they're saying there's going to be a three-way match, potentially a takeover in that scenario with them two again. Mm. So it's like, but why? I feel like everything has been said, everything has been done now. Yeah. I couldn't imagine what you would do here unless it's six man.
Yeah, unless you could turn it into a six man whether Conan wants to actually step in the ring again, I suppose.
Well, exactly,
But the other side of it as well, like, there used to be the old joke in TNA that you would start with a gimmick match and then work your way to a standard tag match. Maybe that's what they're going to do. They're just going to have a regular old tag match. They're going to go really old school with this. Diggity dog.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So coming up next, we had the mask versus hair match between Sami Callihan of The Draw, the Death Machine, Sami Callihan versus Pentagon Jr.
To be confused with The Machine, Brian Cage, who's just, he's a regular one. Callihan is a death one.
Yeah. If I want to work with any machinery, I'm going to work with Brian Cage's machinery because he's just a standard machine.
Yeah, and not the death one.
Not the death
one. If you turn the death one on, death comes.
Yeah, exactly. That's the last thing we need, really, in the workplace.
God.
Oh, who turned on
Impact again! So dangerous!
Who turned on the death machine? Callihan cut a promo before this, and again, doesn't look like anyone else's promos. It's like, it's filmed on this OVE camera, and it's all staticky, and it's just like right
it
up.
It just keeps leaning in and out.
Leaning in, like, the whole, his face fills the screen.
Well, he's doing crash zooms himself.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing. He's he's rocking forward on a crash zoom.
Nice. And, man, if you're watching this on a big screen, you've just got this massive Sammy face. And then they had another.
He's really good at promos, though. He's really good.
Yeah, and they had a really good video package to hype up this match. It was weird as well, because, like, so the start of this match, you've got Sami Callihan there, you've got Pentagon Jr., they've made their big entrances, and this feels like a real big blood feud. The first thing the commentators talk about for quite some time is Callahan's tweets to Chris Jericho.
And really setting up this little bit.
Yeah, and like the fact that they're doing Impact versus ROH on Jericho's cruise and how he's going to be facing Marty Scurll. And it almost felt like, well, we need to get our plug in quickly. Let's get all this out. Because literally Callahan goes, but that's that match, here we got this match.
Yeah, boy, is it a doozy.
Yeah, well, so we'll try not to go through this spot by spot because
It is insane. Well, this felt like a good payoff, because I felt some bits of the build to this have been a bit cheesy. You know, like it. I like the ripping the like ripping masks off luchas into it.
Yeah,
as someone who's recently done it, like quite fun.
Yeah.
But then all the sort of pretending to be each other kind of thing. I do think that some of that video, not the video package from this build bit, but the one from the week before, I think it was this week's Impact, where Callahan is tied up to a chair dressed as Pentagon, and the OV come in, accidentally beat him up for a bit, and he's like, oh, just untie me, and then Pentagon does this,
he rises
like
up.
B-movie horror rise while doing his spooky eyes and going yeah, and then beats them all up, and it's just a bit like this. That felt a little bit too far.
Yeah.
But then when you see them in the ring, you're like, okay, this completely works. It just didn't need to quite go. I feel like when you, same with the he put a hit out on me thing. It just, you tipping it too far into like,
yeah,
actual kidnap. Not a fan of kidnap. Actual kidnap and. Yeah, like hits is going. Yeah. Like you've gone way too far here from like.
Yeah.
You would ever believe that a wrestling match would solve this? I feel like you could still do it for like my family, blah 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 blah. You stole our name. Like, all this kind of like respect and credibility would work for the LAX thing. Same here. Just like he's just a nasty guy and he just wants the mask because
exactly,
he's a
yeah.
douche.
Keep it simple. Yeah. And he's an incredible heel, really. So we got some incredible, like, they just start slapping each other so hard. Lots of stiff chair shots. Mm. Sammy starts throwing in chairs. This is how much I like Sammy as a heel as well. Sammy Callahan starts throwing in chairs into the ring. And he throws one chair, he throws two chairs, he throws three chairs. And the crowd chant, one more chair, one more chair. And if he got another chair out, that would get a babyface reaction. Mm. So he just goes into the ring and he pulls out the middle finger and just flips the bird off to everyone.
Yeah, and then wanders and goes and finds the key item to this entire match, which
yeah,
was
the railroad spike.
Two railroad spikes.
But I just love that because that's a great heel move. And he needed to go out and get a chair later on. So he did plan on getting four chairs at that point. But because the crowd asked for chairs, he went, no, I'm not giving it to you, because that would be a babyface thing to do. And when he didn't get the chair, everyone booed him. I thought it worked really, really great. But yes, there we get to this. Right, so they then get these railroad spikes out. And essentially, they just start stabbing each other with these railroad spikes. And it is just, it's gruesome. It's gruesome, like driving it into each other's heads, and it kind of switches around, and then Callahan starts getting stabbed in the head. But Pentagon Jr. So Pentagon gets the railroad spike, and he places it on Sam Callahan's head, and he has this idea. I'm going to get the other one, and I'm going to knock it, because it's going to make a really wicked sound. And it does. It makes like this big old sound that echoes around the arena, and it'll sound like, yeah, big tink sound.
Mm.
And it'll sound gross, and it'll sound brilliant.
Big Tink Sound was a Fatboy Slim album, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah. It's the difficult second album. And he goes to do the tink, but he misses, like someone trying to do DIY for the first time, and they haven't quite lined up where the nail is. And he misses, and he just hits him in the head, and like, but he starts to say, he's like, ow, you just hit me with the other end of the railroad spike. So that was fine. Then he tried to do it with a baseball bat. He gets the baseball bat out, tries to do the little tink, misses the tink, and just hits him in the head with a baseball bat. Ah!
The problem is he can't really... Yeah, the problem is that's not the spot, so he doesn't really... He just tries as hard as possible not to properly react, because he needs to save it for the bit where the noise happens.
Yeah.
Because the noise is that's the safe bit, where he's holding the end of it in his hand. He just dinks the end, and it just makes a noise.
But instead, he's
actually just whipped him in the head, and he's had to go... Dink! Ah!
That one was so much worse! It really made me laugh. But at this point, like, Callahan is absolutely just... like just piercing blood, like out of his forehead, looks really gross. I think with Pentagon, because he's got the mask, and they teared it open so you could have like a bit of blood coming down.
Mm.
But his blood never looked quite impressive because he's still got the all over face mask.
Yeah,
but it really.
Well, he's
worked.
Also got red accents on bits of his mask, which doesn't help. No.
But Callahan looked awesome, like with the blood pouring down from his stuff, and it just shows you how much blood really can help a wrestling match.
Yeah,
like,
well, and Callahan also, he's like, apart from obviously when you get bloody, there's not really much you can do about it anyway, but. In this scenario, he is not afraid to look disgusting.
Oh, absolutely.
At any, so there's a brilliant bit at the end, which we'll get onto, but there was a bit as well in the middle of the match where I can't remember what happens, but he's celebrating or frustrated and he leans out of the ropes and snot and spit and bile is just coming out of his face. He's just going, and it's like, he is.
It's a gross man.
Yeah, but he's very. He's so good at being like the disgusting heel.
Yeah.
But he plays all the regular sort of normal heel stuff, and then as he starts to lose it, he goes full lose it. Like, absolutely, it's really, yeah, really good.
It's really, really great stuff. And then they both stand up and they start doing a hockey fight, but with the spikes, which was a really, really nice visual. Then we got to the bit, which I I'm not really keen on this because OVE run out and Pentagon Jr. stops them with unprotected chair shots. Mm. And like, I get it, right? I get you're doing this ECW thing. I get that you're doing this violence and you're doing this gritty, you know, bloody match, and it's all over the show and it's carnage and everything. But I mean, unprotected chair shots in 2018 just look ridiculous. Yeah. It just looks stupid.
Well, it's a shame as well because they both also had arms in slings because he'd apparently broken their arms. So it's not even like if they wanted to chuck a hand up, they could.
Yeah,
like,
you exactly. Know. I just think it's such a silly thing to do, knowing what we know about unprotected chair shots and the damage that has been done to people through unprotected chair shots. I just think it's so silly to do it.
I don't think it adds enough.
No,
it doesn't add enough to be worth the risk at all.
That's exactly it.
Well, considering that Rich Swann missed this show because of a concussion,
yeah,
and obviously not from a chair shot, from a bad bump, I think. Mm. But you know that.
But it's
that's
not like,
that's
yeah,
like he can't work now for a bit.
Yeah.
So
concussions and
why would you
chair
do why would you do something that's basically guaranteed to do it? Like, I'm just gonna knock you around the head with this.
Yeah.
For the point of what? He could have just... Because the run-in was pointless at this point.
Yeah.
If the run-in is them, they just get on the right... Because they don't even distract him.
No.
He turns around, handily deals with both of them, and then is back on the offense. It's I don't think, from memory, the actual tide of the match switches at that point.
It turns into him using the powder. So the distraction leads to the powder spot. But you didn't need the distraction in order for the powder spot to come out.
Well, they could have come down and just chucked the powder in.
Yes, or just not done unprotected chair shots because I just think that...
They could just knocked him off the apron
with a drop kick
or...
Yeah, totally. It's not
just
like...
Just push them with a chair.
It's not like I would watch this match and be like, well, I'm so glad they did those unprotected chair shots. That really added... That was the extra bit of salt and pepper that this match needed.
To this blood soup that we've made.
But Sammy throws the powder and he blinds Pentagon Jr. Pentagon Jr. can't see. And he grabs the ref and he does his arm breaker spot to the ref.
So the ref grabs him, doesn't he? And then so he reacts thinking it's Callahan.
Yeah.
Lays out the referee, which is a bit lame. I think at that point I was like, meh. And then he knows where he is on the floor, gets down and goes for the arm breaker, which he's already set up in the match before.
Earlier,
but didn't hit. The referee's
on. I did love the crowd going chanting UF'd up.
Yeah.
That was really great. Because he then hits the Pentagon driver, but the referee can't count. A, he's in pain. B, he's got no arm, mate.
Yeah. He's rolling around in the corner doing this, and then Pentagon gets up and goes to him. It's like, you didn't count.
Come on, mate.
And he rolls over onto his arm. It's like,
And then Sammy hits a package pile driver of his own, handed down to him by Cactus Jack.
But again,
onto a chair. But again, the referee is out. And then that's when he gets the four chairs, and he stacks up these four chairs, and they both get up on top of the chairs, and it looks like he's going to do the package pile driver again, but he doesn't. Instead, Pentagon does the package pile driver onto the chair. I screamed effing hell at the screen.
Yeah, it was...
Because it was a gross-looking spot.
It was horrible.
Horrible. Yeah. But, you know, it was a cool visual. And it wasn't the finish.
No.
And it really should have been the finish, because... Mm. Sammy kicks out after that, and the crowd pops huge.
Because everyone
thought it was the finish.
It was a good kick out. Yeah.
But I felt that the crowd then died down after the match because everyone reacted to that big spot.
Yes.
Because then it's just Pentagon hitting a couple of super kicks and another pile driver, and then he wins.
We nails him with the arm breaker after.
Yeah,
that.
And then
the fear factor, and then it's all over.
Yeah, but I just think the chair spot was the finish of the match for me.
That package pile driver is one of Pentagon's finishes, isn't it?
Yeah,
is it not?
It's like the Pentagon driver. It's different. Yeah. It's different to the Pentagon driver.
But that one. So he calls that one the fear factor, I believe.
But I just thought it was a much cooler visual to end the match on, with this big old chair spot.
Yes, yeah.
The kick out was cool, but then it's five moves too late. It's five moves too many.
Yeah, then you just move down the line to see this. But they ended on the same move, so it just feels a bit, you might as well have just done it there.
Yeah, exactly. And afterwards, the Crists then pull Sammy Callahan, where they start attacking Pentagon Jr. because he's trying to shave his head, and they stop him. And then Sammy's trying to run away, but Phoenix comes out from the back and he stops, and they have a bit of a brawl. And then they shave Sammy Callahan on the ramp. Really cool visual. And to your point earlier, you were saying that Sammy sold this incredibly well.
Like, he managed to do crying and being upset, but in a non-sympathetic way.
That's it. Well, that's what Ollie Davis was saying when we were reviewing this. He was like, he is crying, and you said the same thing, but it's not, you know, you go like, oh man, he's crying. I feel really bad for him. You're like, good. I'm glad you're crying. I'm glad you're feeling this pain as a heel, because you've been such a dick. I think Sami Callihan's a very, very good heel.
There's a really good bit where the crowd start chanting, and his beard! And he just goes, no!
I am fully willing to admit, and I'm going to have some of the humble pie that Ollie Davis has been snacking into us a lot as of late, but I'm turning a corner on Sami Callihan. He's worked me over the past, where I've not been that keen on him, but I think some of the things he said I don't think was a work, but some of the things he said that I disagreed with very much worked me. And I think he's done a great job with that. And, you know, full credit to him. So then we got our main event, which was Austin Aries versus Moose for the Impact World Championship. And this was very similar to the Matt Sydal Brian Cage match, in that Austin Aries is small and the other guy is not.
He big man.
He is a big boy, and he does
big old moose.
And he does some big old moves to the little old Austin Aries. Yeah. There's lots of power moves in this, but I really enjoyed this match. I thought this was a really good main event. There was a lot of Aries sort of like using his wily tactics.
Yeah, it was an interesting one in that regard, because I think they did a lot of the kind of small guy versus big guy, but then there are impressive feats of both athleticism from Moose and strength from Aries in this. Like, Aries gets him up for a brainbuster, no trouble.
Absolutely, yeah.
Moose does a kip up.
Yep.
And then the commentators point out he's 299 pounds. Like, that's a lot. That's a lot of weight to shift.
Absolutely, yeah.
And Moose is like spears, a roll through spear. That's so cool.
Yeah,
the
really
running,
is.
Leaping kick that he does on the corner. Like, there's so much good stuff in this match.
And you made the point earlier as well about Brian Cage, and although Matt Sydal is kind of like, you know, he's on the same level as him, but doesn't damage him because he's being beaten up by a smaller guy.
No.
And the same thing happened here. Moose came out of this still looking credible.
Yeah.
As a big guy. It's just on this day, Aries won, and Aries had to use a lot of cheating tactics in order to get it. But it wasn't like, oh, Aries had to cheat to win.
No.
Aries was able to win on his own, of his own accord anyway.
Yeah, he did do a little bit of cheating.
He did a little bit of cheating.
There was a little low blow in
there
somewhere.
It wasn't like he was required to cheat.
No, it wasn't like he didn't cheat to get the victory. There was cheating along the way.
So. Yeah. And Moose looked really good coming out of this.
I feel like it's almost a shame, though, because it did feel like it should have been Moose.
There was
the
point,
way it was
yeah.
built, like, because the opening package of the show, of the whole of Slammiversary, made a really big deal about it, and like, played into the whole former NFL star, all that kind of stuff, you know, like, there was a lot in this of building him like he was going to be. And there wasn't a lot of the opposite build of Aries being like, I'm a heel, whatever. He was just the champion, you know, like, in this scenario. And yeah, so if it did feel like it was Moose's sort of Cinderella story to be told here.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I feel like that sort of made the ending a little flat.
Yeah,
only
I would agree.
It was
with
such
that.
It was such a normal victory for Austin Aries, and it should have almost been extraordinary.
Yeah, I can completely agree with that. And it almost like brings memories of Monty Brown in the original TNA, and he was actually a very similar story. He was a former NFL player. He was a guy they were very, very high on. They really wanted to push to the moon, but every time they put him into that position, Jarrett always beat him.
Yeah,
and after a while, the crowd stopped caring.
Yeah, I think it's almost the reverse of the AJ Shinsuke kind of deal, where, you know, AJ kept just sort of overcoming Shinsuke, and it became a bit flat at the end, and it kind of, you know, until Shinsuke got the US title, felt like it could have been the death knell of his heat and his push. It feels like that, and this, you know, I don't know necessarily whether Moose will be able to bounce back from this exact finish, because he looked great in a match, and he looked like he should have been there, and he looked like he should have won, and the build said he should have won, the story was great. It's just having such a sort of, well, I've done a win now for Aries was like, you know, it just made it feel like, oh, okay, well,
yeah, it'll be interesting
who's this mug then,
come from the tapings that they're going to do over the next couple of nights,
yeah,
where they go with Moose from here, whether they're going to keep pushing him and, you know, he's going to face Aries again at Bound for Glory, or if he's just going to, this was just a filler match.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just to keep Aries busy until we get to the Bound for Glory match we want to get to. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where we go from here. But there was some nice stuff in here for Moose. There was a really great spot when he was going for the spear, but Aries countered it into the Last Chancery.
That was
absolutely
really
brilliant.
Just deadened it and rolled.
It looked
really
so
cool.
Great. And they do this fight on the apron, and Aries does a Death Valley driver on the apron. And they did this spot where it feels like Aries is going to keep going for the count-out victory. He keeps like going to the ref and being like, start counting.
Yes, yeah.
But then he does a tope or he does a big dive or something like that to be like, he's getting up. This isn't going to work. I've got to stay on offense. And that built to the spot at the end when he did hit the brainbuster on the outside and Moose got back in at 9. And Aaron's like, ah, that nearly worked.
Damn it.
And we get
he does some good stuff in this match.
Some really, really good stuff. And there's a spot when Moose just absolutely launches Aries into the crowd of security. Like, he throws him into the crowd.
Oh, yes.
Like, the crowd are far away, but it, like, lands in security. But it felt like old school ECW. I feel like I can keep going back to this. Yeah. But that's what it felt like. It was just like throwing, like, you know, the way that Bam Bam Bigelow would throw little Spike Dudley, you know, into the crowd of people for everyone to catch.
Well, the only weird spot with that, the only weird thing with that was that he then gets back in the ring. And the ref starts counting, and then it's sort of like he realizes,
oh, I can't win.
Oh, wait, I can't win the belt that way, so I'll have to go get him.
Yeah, so he goes and
gets
him.
And then the commentators had to point it out, and I just feel like, yeah, if you just had a, like, chuck him into the crowd by all means, but yeah, you got to go get him, mate.
You got
to
get
him. You're going to have to get him straight away. Like,
so we get this spot at the end where Aries grabs the belt, but that's taken away from him, and Moose gets a near fall off of that, like a little cheeky roll up. But
there's another bit in that roll up as well where he has to scooch.
Yeah,
he does a little scooch. It's like he rolls in, but he rolls in too short, and he goes, going to get you
down. Get you down. And that's a near fall for Moose, but it would never felt like a real near fall. Like,
no.
It was just, it never felt like it was going to be the end of the match.
It was a bit too, I think the setup of it was just a little bit too slow. That scooch actually did take a lot of momentum out of it.
Yeah, and I don't think the crowd ever bought it as a near fall either. And which is a shame, because it was actually pretty much the last thing in the match. Aries then did a soccer kick, hit the brainbuster, and won. And that was the end of it. So to your point, it did feel a bit flat at the end. Although I did really enjoy the match.
Yeah, there wasn't enough shenanigans with the getting the belt, I think. You know, it was he got the belt, and then the referee sort of saw him and was immediately like, no, and then who's your mate on the outside?
I just feel like this is where we were building into... Yeah. The final third of the match, like, there's, you know, we're now going to start building, we're going to start trading some near falls and really make this feel like a big time main event. But that was it. Actually,
they just went, oh, Aries wins now.
Yeah, that's your final spot of the match, and now he's won, and off we go.
Which is fine. It was really good. It was good until that point, but it's a shame that just felt like such a normal TV finish.
Yeah.
Rather than this is a fairly big pay-per-view.
Exactly, yeah. This is, you know, in TNA standards, even back when they were doing 12 pay-per-views a month, this was like one of their big four. You know, this is like, it was this, Lockdown and Bound for Glory. Those were your big pay-per-views.
Mm.
And, you know, maybe Genesis in January. Those were your big-time pay-per-views. So it was a shame that this didn't have a big main event finish.
Yeah. And it's a shame because, you know, as much as I'm a proponent of the belt should be the final thing, the main event should be the belt.
Yes.
Whatever your biggest, best belt is should be the main event. In this scenario, had you put Callahan versus Pentagon at the end, what an ending that would have been. Rather than, unfortunately for Moose, this just sort of quite a... Aries wins.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.